Preface. So we're holding exactly at the top of Tesvav Amud Aleph. We mentioned in the Mishnah about the Lechi, about the rules of the Lechi, that it has to be at least 10 tefachim tall, and there's no minimum thickness. There's no minimum thickness of it. I should mention, by the way, we said yesterday it doesn't have to have any minimum thickness. However, we did say in the Gemara the other day that it can't be something that's going to be moved around or blown down by the wind. So, for example, in Shulchan Aruch, it mentions that one way of making a valid lechi, let's say, would be to take some plaster and paint a stripe of plaster on the wall. That would work because it's not going to be blown down by the wind, and it is a hecker. But it does so it doesn't have to have any minimum thickness, but it does have to be able to stand. Another interesting din that comes out of that, by the way, as it mentions in Shulchan Aruch, a lechi you would be allowed to make out of something that is also bahana. A koda you would not, because a koda, we said, has a minimum width of a tefach. We have a general rule that, let's say, for example, something that's also bahana, for example, an object of avodah zarah. We have a concept that comes up in different places in halacha called katusi michtas shiure. Since it has to be destroyed, we consider it as if even now it was destroyed, and therefore it doesn't have enough of a shiur. So for a koda, it would be no good. But for a lechi, since a lechi doesn't really have to have a minimum shiur, then you'd be allowed to use something. You'd be allowed to use something from an asherah or other avodah zarah for that purpose. Okay, but now we're going to talk about a different angle on the matter of a lechi. Itmar lechi ha'oimin me'elav. If a lechi is just standing there by itself, you didn't set it up for the purpose of a lechi, it just happens to be there. Examples that we're going to have later on are, let's say, one example would be, let's say, there's a tree standing by the entrance of the lechi. Another example the Gemara is going to give at the end of the sugya would be, let's say, a pillar that's there in order to hold up a porch that's next to the mavri, where it wasn't placed there for the sake of a lechi, does it still count as one? Abaya oma have a lechi, Rava oma loy have a lechi. Seven machlokas Abaya and Rava, whether it counts as a lechi or not. So the Gemara says, Hecha delay sam chinan alay me'esmo. Now, if we didn't rely on this lechi before Shabbos, namely, in other words, Rashi says, there was a different lechi over there. There was a different lechi, and then during Shabbos, it fell down. And now we're going to say, wait, but we have this tree or whatever over there. So now we want to use it. Then everybody would agree that's not a valid lechi, because at least you have to have, there was so much on it before Shabbos. The question is, if we were so much on it before Shabbos, so then Abaya Oma Havi Lechi Da Samchin and Aleme Esmo. So Abaya says, look, after all, they did rely on it before Shabbos. They were planning to use it as a lechi. Therefore, it is valid, even though it wasn't set up to begin with for the purpose of a lechi. Rava Amar, lo yahavi lechi. Rava says that no, kiven de me'ikra lava daita dehochi avidi, because they didn't make it specifically for that purpose in the first place. Therefore, lo yahavi lechi. So therefore, it's not a valid lechi, says Rava. Okay. Well, we're going to get to at the end of the sugya who the halacha is like, but for right now, let's go through the various proofs of the Gemara pro and con. And also, so the Gemara starts by saying kasalka daibach. Now, for purposes of discussion, we're going to assume ki heichid pligi belechi pligi nami b'mechitza. For purposes of discussion, we're going to assume that Abaya and Rava's machloikas, they have the same machloikas when it comes to a mechitza in general. Because after all, we've been saying the last few days that one possible thing we could say that a lechi's purpose is to serve as a semblance of a mechitza on the fourth side. So on the face of it, we would assume then that they have the same machlokas as far as a mechitza. If there's a mechitza there before Shabbos that wasn't set up for the purpose of a mechitza, does it still work? So, Toshma, in which case we have a Mishnah in Sukkah, let's use as a proof. The Mishnah says, Ha'oisa Sukkah. So if a person sets up his sukkah between the trees, and the trees form the walls of the sukkah. Now, we learned at the end of Masechta Shabbos, we had a somewhat different case. We had actually Machlokas Rashi and Tosfos, what the exact case was over there. We had a case involving trees being used as the walls of the sukkah. Was it actually that the sukkah is resting on the trees? In other words, that you built a floor of a sukkah resting on tops on the tops of the trees, or is it that also we're using the trees as the walls of the sukkah, but you actually have the schach attached to the trees? Here we're talking about nothing of that sort. The Mishnah just says over there, you have your tree is built, your sukkah is built among the trees, and the trees are the walls, and the trees are the walls of the sukkah. So the sukkah is not resting on the trees. It's not, the schach is not necessarily resting on the trees. You're just using, instead of building walls for your sukkah, you use the trunks of the trees as the walls. So the Mishnah says, kshera. So such a sukkah is kosher. Now, so you see, therefore, that even you didn't build the wall, the preposterous, you didn't plant these trees in order to serve as walls of a sukkah, and yet we're saying that they count as valid mechitzas. So therefore, so you see that even a mechitza is standing by itself, it still counts. But the Gemara says, no. So in that case, that would be a proof to Abaya that even a tree, that the same way as by mechitza, again, we would assume the same thing applies to a lechi, that if a lechi is standing by itself as kosher, as a lechi, just as we would say if a tree is standing by itself, it serves as a valid wall for a sukkah. The answer is the Gemara says not necessarily. Rava would answer, Rava would say that here we're talking about where you planted the trees specifically for that purpose to serve as walls of the sukkah. We're holding about a half, or a little less than halfway down the narrow lines on Tesvav Amud Aleph. Line begins, the line begins Hacha. Okay. So Rava would answer that we're talking about where you actually planted the trees for that purpose. Says, no, in that case, isn't it poshut that would work as walls for the sukkah? Of course, if you planted them specifically for that purpose, why would it be any different than why would it be different than any other case where you set up walls for the sukkah? The answer is Maud Tema Ligzo Duma Osilish Tamushi Bilan. Fine, but Rava would say maybe we should make a Xera that maybe it shouldn't be so posh. Maybe you should make a Xera that you shouldn't use the trees as walls for your sukkah, because you may end up using the tree. And as we look at on Yom Tov or on Shabbos, and as we learned at the end of Masechta Shabbos, you're not allowed to do that, Midrabanan, because you might break off a branch. Kamash Mulan. Therefore, that would be the Chiddush of the Mishnah. Not so much that you can use not so much that the trees function as walls, that's poshut, but that even on Shabbos, so Yom Tov, during sukkahs, you don't have a problem using such a sukkah. That could be the chiddush of it according to Rava. Okay. Toshma, let's bring another proof from the next perek. Now, we mentioned briefly a couple of times in our perek, we're going to discuss in greater detail at the beginning of the next perek, the concept of pasei berois, the concept of these L-shaped pieces around a well. You have a picture of it here in Rashi. You have a picture of it here in Rashi, where you have a well in the middle, and instead of having a full mechitza on each side, you have four L-shaped poles by the four corners. Now, I mean, of course, the diagram in Rashi over here shows that most of it is closed in by those. If you had that, then you wouldn't have a problem. The point is, the real situation, as we're going to learn in the next parak, is that you only have these poles, these L-shaped poles, are one amma in each direction, and then you have a space of 10 ammas or 13 ammas, as we're going to learn in the next parak between them. So you're allowed to have, we're going to learn in the next parak. Rav Meir says up to 10 amas, Rav Yehuda says up to 13 and one third. The poles themselves, the poles themselves are called diyumdin. Each of these L-shaped poles is called a diyumad. Diyumad, the Gemara is going to explain in the next parak. Diu is a Greek prefix meaning two. It's related to, like in English, you have carbon dioxide and other such words. Amud means a pole. So diyumdin, diu amudin means a double pole. So they're bipolar, haha. Okay. So they go this way and this way, right? And you have one of them around each corner of the well, and that way it makes at least a semblance of mechitzis, and on a deraisa level, that's okay. Usually, midrabanan, that would be no good. You'd have to have oimen merubah alaparutz, as we've learned before. But over here, for the sake of the oile regal, so they should be able to water their animals, the chachamim allowed it. Anyway, so the Mishnah says over there, not the Mishnah, the Braisa says over there, Hayasham Ilan, what if in one corner where one of the Diyumdin is supposed to be, there's a tree, Oy Geder, or fence, Oy Chitzas Akonim, or a thicket of reeds, you have a bunch of reeds that grow, like bamboo or whatever, that grow very closely together. So then, Nidin Mishum Diyumad, such a thing counts as a Diyumad as long as it's large enough that you could conceivably carve out a Diyumad piece, a Diyumad size piece, an Amma by an Amma, and 10 Tvachim tall out of it. So in this example over here, you have a tree, let's say over here. If the trunk of the tree is at least an Amma by an Amma, then you're good. So you see from that, now Bapashtus, the tree wasn't planted for this purpose, and still it works as a beginning of a mechitza. And the answer, so what would Rava do with that? And the answer is Hochanami, Mayaskin and Shason Metchilu Lekach. There also, we're talking about that you planted the tree or you put up the fence to begin with to serve as one of the Diyumdin. Okay, so then again, the question is Yehoch Yimai Kamashmalan. Then in that case, what is the chiddush? So, the answer is Kamashmalan Chitzas Akonim. The answer is you're right. The case of the tree or the case of the fence is not really that much of a chiddush. Tosfos says that you still could give the same answer as before, that maybe the chiddush is that we're not worried that you're going to use the tree or whatever on Shabbos. But in that case, the Braisa didn't have to bring three different examples. It could have just brought the example of a tree, and we would understand the other ones from it. So no, the chiddush is rather primarily about the chitzas akanim, about these weeds that grow very closely together. So we're mentioning the tree, and we're mentioning the fence, by the way, with that. And the point is, where you have chitzis akanim, kona pochas b'shloshet tvachim, where you have each of the reeds is less than three tvachim apart, and that is a chiddush, k'dibomine Abaya m'Rabba. In fact, we're going to have in the next parak, where Abaya asks Rabba about just such a case, where you have, if you have like that, now the question is like this, we know that things between three tvachim, within three tvachim, one of another are lovely. The question is, in this case, given that already we're being makel with these pase birois to say that you have a space 10 amos or 13 amos between one diumad and the next, and we're still allowing it, even though you have much more open than closed space, maybe at least the diumadim themselves have to be something solid. Maybe you can't have that within the diumad itself, we're going to start applying lovud and say if you have a reed here, a reed here, a reed here, that it should count. So Abaya asked Rava that. So our braisa wants to tell us, the chiddush is to tell us that that is valid. So you're doing a kula on top of a kula, because it means you're doing a kula to make it considered b'chlal lovud, and then on top of that, you're making a kula b'chlal to use that as one of your four, that now you can have four diumdin, and now you can carry around that well. All of that is a big chiddush, so therefore that's what the Braisa wants to tell us. But again, according to Rava, all of this would be talking about where you planted those weeds for that purpose, or you planted that tree for that purpose, etc., to serve as a diumud, and therefore no proof about, at least that's how we would assume. Again, the Gemara is all assuming that the same machlokas Abaya and Rava have about a lechi, the Gemara is assuming that they have the same machlokas about a mechitza. We're going to see later that that's not so. But right now, for purposes of discussion, if we say that Rava says by a mechitza also that a mechitza needs to be something that's put up specifically for the purpose, then he would have to say that this chitzas akanim was planted specifically for this purpose.
But the tree, wouldn't you say that we need the
chiddush
of
chokkim l'hashanim? No, because we would have that also with when you get down to it, the chitzas akanim is not necessarily planted in an L shape either, you know? You also have to have chokkim l'hashanim. And anyway, no, chokkin lahashlam is something else anyway. Chokkin lahashlam is like we had the other day by an arched doorway with a mezuzah, that even though we don't have a full rectangle of 4 by 10, 4 across and 10 tall, we consider as though part of the wall was carved out to make that. Here you actually have an L shape. You're right. I mean, we are going to talk about chokkin lahashlam in it, because you have to consider as though it was carved. Right. I mean, okay, but it's still not that much of a chiddush.
Where do we take that suddenly we can increase the distance before more than three tfachim and say it's okay, it's fine?
You're talking about the whole concept of pasa birois. So again, because midaraisa, as long as you have the appearance of four walls, then you're good. So therefore, so usually we would say that's osur. Usually, as we're going to learn on Amud Beis, you do need oimin meruba ala parutz. Over here, in this particular case, because for the sake of the oile regel, so for the sake that they should be able to water their animals, the Chacham allowed us to stay with the original din daraisa, and that it's mutter as long as you have the corners are set up, and therefore you have the appearance of four walls over there. We're going to discuss that in more detail. We're going to discuss that in more detail in the next parak.
I understand, but four stakes is like four walls.
It's not just four sticks, remember. Each of these sticks is L-shaped. So it goes one amma to the north and one amma to the west, for example, and so forth around the four sides. So therefore, yes, when you look from the top, you have the appearance of four walls over there. So as long as, now you can't have more than a certain amount of gap between them. If you have a gap of more than 10 ammas, according to the Meir, or 13 and one-third ammas, according to the Yehuda, then it's no good. Then you need to put in shutim, You need to put in straight poles, not L-shaped ones, in between every so often in order to narrow the spaces. But other than that, you don't. So again, we're gonna learn about it. We're gonna learn about it in the next perek, beginning on Daf Yud Zayin, Bez Hashem. So just hold halt cup, and we'll learn about it in a couple of days. Okay, fine. Tashma, Ilan Hamesach Halaretz. We learn also. We're gonna learn this in the next perek. If a tree's branches hang over the ground. If the branches of the tree are not three tefachim off the ground, metaltel and tachtav, then you're allowed to carry underneath it. We've learned before that if a mechitza is more than three tefachim off the ground, then three or more tefachim off the ground, then it's no good because not. And we said it's not even a matter of lavud anymore. We said it's a matter of gdoyim boikim ba, that young goats are able to walk underneath it, and therefore that's mevatel it as a mechitza. So here you have a tree where the branches overhang the ground. As long as the branches are within three tefachim of the ground, then it's considered enclosed, and therefore you're allowed to carry there. Now, again, you didn't plant the tree for this purpose, Bapashtos, and yet we see that the branches of it that are hanging down serve as a mechitza. So what would Rava do with that? The answer is, again, we could be talking about where you planted the tree specifically, where you had in mind, eventually the branches of it are going to enclose an area where you're going to be able to carry. Okay, it might take many, first of all, yeah, I mean, you could say it might take many years for the tree to grow. You could have actually, I mean, remember, you can replant a mature tree as well. You have, for example, a case in Bava Metzia where one person's trees got washed away in a storm or something, and they land in somebody else's property and they start growing there. So you could actually have where you can transplant the tree from one place to another, and it's already partially mature. But even if you have, if it's a younger tree, okay, you know, so it'd be like the story of that guy in Tynus, right? You know, was planting a carob tree, knowing that he himself is not going to eat the carobs from it, but his great grandchildren will. Yeah, you know, so okay. There is that also, yeah, but there you wouldn't have that. You planted it to begin with. Where, yeah. Okay. So the question is, if that were the case, if you planted the tree specifically for that purpose, or not specifically, but you had at least in mind that purpose when you planted it, that the branches eventually are going to hang down and you're going to be able to carry there, if you're going to say that, then you ought to be able to carry under the entire tree. So why do we find that Rav Huna Bar Edi Rav Yeshua says that you can't? You can only carry under that tree only if the area enclosed by the branches is up to Beis Sasayim. We're going to be talking about Beis Sasayim a great deal in the next perek in connection with all the dinim of Karpif and all of that. Beis Sasayim is an area of 5,000 square amas. That's the size of the Chotzer of the Mishkan. The Chotzer of the Mishkan was 50 by 100 amas, so 5,000 square. So in general, we have a rule which we're going to be discussing a lot in the next perek, that if you have an area that's enclosed of more than 5,000 square amas, and it wasn't enclosed ledira, it wasn't enclosed for living purposes, then you're not allowed to carry in it midrabanan. It's called a karpif. So over here, we're saying that the tree is the same thing. You can only carry it under it up to 5,000 square amas. Now, if you say the tree wasn't planted for that to begin with, okay, then I can understand. It's no different than, for example, any other enclosed area. You didn't enclose it for the sake of living. Just right now, you want to live under it. So therefore, we have this rule. But if Rava has to say that the tree was actually planted to begin with for the purpose of being able to live underneath it, then why should he be limited to Beis Sasayim? The answer is Mishum Dahabid Dirat Shetashmish Al Avir. The answer is, even if you planted it to begin with for that purpose, so you have like this. There's a concept we're going to learn in the next parak called the Hukaf Ladira. You can have where an area was enclosed for the purpose of being used for living space versus loy hukaf ladira, where it wasn't. So let's say, for example, in modern terms, you would have, let's say, for example, the yard of your house would be an example of a place that's hukaf ladira. A playground, let's say, might be an example of an area that's not hukaf ladira. They didn't enclose the playground with the intention that anybody is ever going to live there. You want to have a kids for the place to come Shabbos afternoon to play. But now we're making a further distinction. Even within a dira itself, there's something called dira shetashmish al aver. The purpose of the dira there is not really so much for itself, it's for the area around it. Meaning, in other words, like this, normally you have a house. that you the house is built, you buy or rent or build or whatever a house because you want to live in that actual house. You have a purpose that you want to live in that actual house. Versus you have, let's say, you're not really interested in the house itself. You're only there because you need something in the area around it. For example, so Rashi gives an example. Let's say, for example, you're guarding a field. You're on Shabbos, let's say, you're guarding a field to make sure nobody steals the fruit or animals don't take it or whatever. So you don't really want to live in such a house. You're living in it only for the sake of being able to guard the area outside of it. The area under the tree is the same thing. You're not living under the tree because you want to. You're living there because you have no choice, because you need to watch something that's outside the tree. So therefore, it's called Dira Shatashmishal Aver. Dira Shatashmishal Aver. So this is a Dira whose main purpose is for the airspace around it. V'chol Dira Shatashmishal Aver. When you have something like that, Ein Metaltlin by Ela Beis Sasayim, then the rule is the area around it, you're only allowed to carry in up to a Beis Sasayim. Because the house itself is not really considered such a dira. In other words, again, there's an area that's hukaf ladira. There's an area where you have a house in it, and the fence around the yard, let's say, it's meant to enclose the house as well. And then you're allowed to carry in the whole yard, even if it's more than beis sasayim. But only if the house itself is considered primarily the dira. Whereas over here, the primary purpose of the house under the tree is to watch the area outside it. So that's why we would say, even though you planted the tree specifically for that purpose, you can't carry in there more if the area under the tree is more than beis sasayim. Okay. Tashma, shavas betel shu gavoya asara. Now, we're going to learn in more detail later on in the Masechta about the concept of tchum Shabbos. One part of the dinim of Tchum Shabbos is the person's Tchum. If a person starts out in a city at the beginning of Shabbos, then their Tchum Shabbos is 2,000 amos around the city. And we're going to learn in detail in the fifth parak about how you measure the boundaries of the city for this purpose. But let's say you can also have where a person's Mokum Shvisa, a person's home base for Shabbos, is someplace out in the middle of nowhere. So he has 2,000 amas in each direction from that. Now you also have a rule though, that if the person is within an enclosed area, then that whole enclosed area counts as if it was 4 amas, and then he has 2,000 amas beyond that. Meaning, in other words, in general, a person has 4 amos around him. Makom Mishal Adam is 4 amos, and then you start measuring the 2,000. Then you start measuring the 2,000 amos from there. So, like for example, imagine if a person's Makom Shvisa on Shabbos is a house. So, let's say you have an individual house in the middle of nowhere. So, the whole house counts like 4 amos, and then you have 2,000 amos. Then you have 2,000 amos beyond that. So now the Braisa says, Shavas Patel Shu Gavoya Asara. If a person makes his home base for Shabbos a hill, a mound of dirt, which is at least 10 tefachim tall, v'hume aba amas v'ad beis sasayim, and the top of it, the area of it, is anywhere from 4 by 4 amas until beis sasayim. The reason why it's important, the reason why those figures are important, so Rashi says if it was less than 4 amas, it wouldn't matter, because anyway he has 4 amas around him. You would only start counting his Tchum Shabbos from outside of those 4 amas. It can't be more than beis sasayim for the reason that we said. More than beis sasayim doesn't count as an enclosed area for purposes of these halachas. We would still say he's only allowed to be carrying in the 4 amos around him. But as far as walking, we're saying he has 2,000 amos. So we're saying that like this. So if the thing is between 4 by 4 until beis sasayim, v'chein b'neka, the same thing. If he has his home base for Shabbos is in a cleft in a rock, meaning like a cave or a hole in a rock or something, shu omer kasara, which is at least 10 tefachim deep, again, it's somewhere between 4 by 4 and beis sasayim. Or if he has his Shabbos home base for kamak tzura in a harvested field. So let's say you have the middle of the field was harvested, the edges weren't yet, and the stalks of grain on the side are at least 10 tefachim tall all around. So again, then therefore, so that whole area inside the stalks will be considered as if it was his 4 amos. So he's going to be able to, as long as it's not beis sasayim, then he'll actually be able to carry in that area. It'll all be counted as if it was his 4 amos. And then his tchum will begin from outside of that. So if there's a fence, then you go by the fence, right? But yeah. So the comic sort of shibolus makifesoisa. So if he's in a field which was partially harvested and you have stalks of grain surrounding it. So in all those cases, mahalachas kol of a chutzal paimama. In all those cases, he's allowed to walk throughout that area. It's all considered as if he was as if it was his four amas. And then in addition, he has 2,000 amas beyond that in every direction. Now what's the point why that area counts like four amas is because those things, the sides of the mound of dirt or the sides of the rock or the grain or whatever count as mechitzas. So again, so according to Rava, what do you mean? If we're saying according to Rava that everything has to have been made for the purpose of a mechitza, then how does that work over here? So you're going to try to give the same answer that we did for the previous cases that we're talking about where you made them specifically for that purpose. Well then, fine. When it comes to a field of grain, I can understand that. Maybe Taka, the guy specifically harvested only the middle of the field and left the grain growing around the edges specifically for that purpose in order to serve as a mechitza. Ela tail the neck of my ikalamema. What about you're going to say? What about the mound of dirt or the cleft in the rock? Those are things that are, as Rashi says, mimos olamheim. Those have always been there. Those were there long before you decided to make that your home base for Shabbos. So my ikalamema. What are you going to say? It has to be that those things existed before you came there, and still we're saying that they count as mechitzas. So you see that even something that was not made for the purpose of a mechitza still counts as a mechitza. Okay, so you go right. The Gemara says Ella, no. So we have to change our mind from before. The mechitzas kol ha'amole pligi to have a mechitza. When it comes to mechitzas, everybody would agree that a mechitza is that a thing is considered a mechitza, whether you made it specifically for that purpose or not. So now we don't need any of these doichkim that we did by any of these cases. By the sukkah, we don't have to say that you planted the trees specifically to use as walls of the sukkah. By the yumad, we don't have to say that you planted the tree or put up the fence or whatever specifically for that purpose to serve as one of the corners of the diumad, and so forth. By the tree that you're carrying underneath, you don't have to say you planted it specifically for that purpose. Ki pligi belechi. Rather, Abaya and Rava are specifically arguing about an issue involving a lechi. So their argument about whether the lechi ha'im and me'elav is a valid thing, that machlokas applies only to a lechi, not to a mechitza. So therefore, Abaya l'taimei. So Abaya is going according to his own svara. The Amal lechi mishum mechitza. He says that the purpose of the lechi is to serve as a mechitza. Or mechitza hasu yimei lehavi mechitza. No, we just established that a mechitza, even if it was made by itself, is still a valid mechitza. So he says, therefore, lechi has to be the same thing. The Rava l'taimei. Meanwhile, Rava goes according to his own svara. The Amal lechi mishum heker. He says the primary purpose of the lechi is to serve as a heker that you should notice, that you should realize that you're not allowed to carry past this point, or that the Bnei Rishos HaRabim should realize they're not allowed to carry in Rishos HaRabim. Ia vidi b'yadayim have a heker. So if the lechi is made by hand, if it was put up by somebody, then it's a heker. V'loy have a heker. If not, then it's not a heker. Now, where do we find Abaya and Rava having these svaras? Rava, we did see the other day. We had clearly in the Gemara the other day where Rava said that lechi mishum heker. But where do we find that Abaya had said that the lechi is mishum mechitza? So actually, Rabbeinu Chananel is not good at that at all. Rabbeinu Chananel doesn't have in his Gemara at all that Abaya and Rava are going according to their own shittas. It just says that Abaya is saying it's mishum mechitza and Rava is saying mishum heker. On the other hand, Tosfos explains like this. We had a case back on Daf Hey. Suppose you had the Koda was more than 20 amos off the ground, and we had a case where instead of lowering the Koda, you want to raise up the dirt underneath it. You want to raise up the ground underneath it in order to have those less than 20 amos. We had a bias saying that We had a bias saying over there that you only need to have what did we have over there? That a bias had said that you need 4 tefachim wide of dirt or bench or whatever over there. Because and we discussed a couple of reasons why we had Rabbi Yosef saying you need only 1 tefach, a bias saying you need 4, and we had a discussion what would be various reasons why each of them would say, and one possibility we mentioned is that maybe Abaya holds that there it was talking about the Korah, but the one possibility we said over there is Abaya holds that the Korah is there as a hecker, and therefore if you don't have 4 tefachim, if you don't have a 4 tefach wide thing underneath it that's higher, then you're not going to have a hecker for the Korah, because you're not just going to notice it when you're standing right underneath the Korah, whereas Rabbi Yosef says it's Mishum Machitza. That was one possibility we mentioned over there. So we would say the same thing. Abaya would say that the same thing that applies to the Korah applies to the Lechi. If we say the Korah is there Mishum Hecker, then the Lechi is also there Mishum Hecker, and there you go. He'd be going according to his own shita. So in that particular case, because the quota is higher than 20, you need dirt or bricks or whatever built up underneath it. So Abaya would say you need 4 tefachim wide. The Baal Amor says yet another explanation. We had a machloikas on daf tes concerning the case whether you're allowed to carry next to the lechi or not. We said we had a machloikas, Abaya and Rava, whether you're allowed to carry next to the lechi. The lechi is vertical. So are you allowed to carry next to the lechi or not? So now the Baal HaMor says that's the same machlokas as over here. So, and in fact, the Baal HaMor says, given that we're going to say at the end, most Rishonim paskin like Abaya over here, then the Baal HaMor says over there also, the halacha has to be like Abaya. Most Rishonim disagree with that and say there's no connection between the two machlokas. And here the halacha can be like Abaya because one of the 6 things of Yao Kagam, as we're going to say soon, but over there it's a different machlokas, and therefore not necessarily is the halacha like Abaya over there. Okay. Anyway. So Abaya and Rava are going to the respective svaris whether the lechi is there as a mechitza, and a mechitza would be fine even if it's asuya me'eleha, or whether it's mishum heker, and in that case it has to have been built there specifically for that purpose, so it'll actually serve as a heker. So okay, the Gemara says Toshma, we learn in a brisa, Avne geder hayotzis min ageder muvdolos zumizu pachas mishloy muvdolos zumizu. What if you have stones sticking out of a fence that are separated from each other? So you have like this, for example, on one side of the lechi and on one side of the mavui, you have bricks that are sticking out, but you have a brick, a space, a brick, a space. So if you have that, if the distance between one brick and the next one above or below it is less than 3 tefachim, then you don't need a different lechi. If it's 3 tefachim or more, if it's more than 3 tefachim rather, then you need a separate lechi, because now you don't have a lavud anymore. Now, bapashtus, those were not built for the purpose of a lechi. Those are just built for, as the Gemara is going to say in a second, because eventually you want to extend the building. And yet we say, right, okay, but nevertheless, Rava is saying they have to have been built for the purpose of a lechi. So the answer is Hochanami Shabnan Mitchila Vakach. Rava would say that over here it means you built it for that purpose, that'll serve as a lechi. So the question is, Yochab Pshita, then in that case it's Poshit, why do we need to say that it works as a lechi? The answer is Maudatema Lamesa Binyana Hudavida. You could argue it wasn't really right now they're using it as a lechi. But what's the primary purpose? The primary purpose of putting bricks like that is because eventually you want to extend the building, and then you don't want to have a seam in the wall. You want to have a solid connection between the old part of the building and the new one. Therefore, you dafka leave the bricks going in and out like that, so that later on when you lay more bricks, you can lay them continuously with the other ones and have a continuous wall. So there's not really much of a hecker with that. Therefore, the Braisa wants to tell us that nevertheless, fine, eventually when you build that wall, of course, you're not going to have the hecker. But meanwhile, as long as those bricks are there, it still serves as a hecker.
So that's a noticeable on the eye. So I'm walking out to see, oh, down
It doesn't have to. No, no, no. We don't just mean one brick. Remember, you have to have a minimum. You have to have a minimum height of 10 tefachim. So you have a brick, a space, a brick, a space. It, as long as it's 10 tefachim tall, it doesn't matter. As long as 10 tefachim tall, it's considered a hecker. Yeah. Yeah, but if you have something 10 tefachim tall, it's tall enough to notice. Also, yeah. Okay. Toshma, the Tani Reb Chiya. What about? Let's use as a proof a braisa that Reb Chiya taught. Koisel shetzidoy echad konus mechaveroy. A wall where one side is more indented than the other one, whether it's visible as a lechi from the outside, but on the inside it looks smooth, or the other way around, where on the inside it looks like a lechi and on the outside it looks straight. So we have the various diagram, we have the various pictures over here. We didn't yet have the book at the time, so we didn't necessarily understand it that clearly. But you have, for example. So you have here. Let's see. So here's an example. Here's an example where it's nirim. On the outside, you can see that there's a lechi over there, but on the inside, it just looks like part of the straight wall. You have over here the other way around. Nirim on the inside, you can see that there's a lechi over there. From the outside, it just looks like a continuation of the wall. So Rav Chiya had said in his braisa that such things count as a lechi. Made mefnim nidin mishum lechi. So now again, Bepashtus, you didn't build the wall in for that purpose. Bepashtus, you built the wall. You didn't intend necessarily that it was going to be used for a lechi. In fact, one of the scenarios we had over there was Tosfos had mentioned over there. You could have where the people of the next door mavui built their wall shorter than yours. So now you have there's a short wall on so on one side you have a short wall, on the other side you have a longer wall. So now from the outside it's nidah b'machutz. You can see from the outside that it's longer over here than over here, and therefore it serves as a lechi. On the inside, when you're standing inside the mavui, you don't see any difference. And when you're standing from the inside of the mavui, it just looks like a one wall. Yeah, here you have an example. Here, yeah, well, this is actually an example of nidah b'mifnim, but you'd have the same concept reversed for nidah b'machutz. Where you have, there's the wall of this mavri they built only up until here. The wall of this mavri they built all the way out to here. So if it was the other way around, if the shorter wall, which is where the corner forms, where the lechi forms, was on the other side, you also have it counts as a mavri. Now, Bepashtus, as a lechi, Bepashtus, they didn't build it for that purpose. They happened to build their mavri that way. And still we see it work. So what is Rava going to do with that? The answer is that here also we're talking about they did build it specifically for that purpose. Yeah, they were building their mavri short, but they also had in mind that it'll serve as a lechi. Again, the question is, Yehochi by Kamash Malon. Then in that case, what's the Chiddush? The answer is, Kamash Malon, Nidim Mechutz, Veshav Rufnim, Nidim Mishum Lachi. The Chiddush is exactly that point, that if it's only visible from the outside and not the inside, that it counts as a Lachi, which we had a whole sugya about it on Daf Test to discussing the pros and cons of that. Does such a thing count? We had opinions actually that said that it doesn't. So therefore, it is a big Chiddush to tell us that it still does count as a Lachi. But the chiddush doesn't have to be whether it was built for that purpose or not. Rava can say it was built specifically for that purpose, and the chiddush is that even though it's not visible from the inside, it still counts as a lechi. Okay. Toshma, the Rav have a Yosef Bahu Mavoya. Let's bring a proof like this. Rav was sitting in a certain living in a certain mavoy. Have a Yosef Rav Huna Kame. Rav Huna, Rav's Talmud, was sitting in front of him and learning. Rav told his servant, "Go bring me a pitcher of water." Kuza means a pitcher. Ad osa. By the time the shamish came back, nafal lechia. The lechi on the mavri fell down. So he motioned to the shamish, "Stay right where you are, because now we can't carry in the mavri anymore." So Rav Huna asks Rav, what's the problem? Rebbe, don't you hold that we can rely on the palm tree? This particular mavri happened to have a palm tree growing right by one side of it. So why can't we rely on that as a lechi? Omar, so Rav answered, Domi Haimed Abodan Kirmandale Bhaushi Inchi Shmaita. This Tamad Chacham, meaning Rav Huna, is acting like somebody who never learned the relevant halachas. Did we rely on that tree from before Shabbos? seems, now it seems to imply time of deloy samchinan. So the implication seems to be, why is Rava saying we can't use the tree? Because we weren't soymach on it before Shabbos, because we were soymach on the actual lechi that was there, but now that lechi has fallen down. Ha samchinan habe lechi. It sounds like if we were soymach on it, it would be a good lechi. Now that works according to Abaya. What is Rava going to do with that? Would that mean lema abaya v'rava b'deloy samchinan ale pligi? So now would we have to maybe, should we maybe understand the machlokas of abaya and rava the other way around? We started the sugya by saying that it's a given that if you weren't soymach on it before Shabbos, then definitely it can't count as a lechi. The machlokas is only if you were soymach on it before Shabbos, does it count or not? Now, based on the story of Rav, would we have to say the other way around? In order not to make that Rava is completely contradicted by the story of Rav, would we have to say that would we have to say then that Abaya and Rava are arguing about only where you weren't soymach on it before Shabbos? And the implication would be if we were soymach on it before Shabbos, then both Abaya and Rava would agree that it is a valid lechi. The answer is lois sakudat. You can't think that way. Dahu barka, because there was a certain porch, to have a bay barchovu, which was by the house of barchovu. And the point was, you can see in the picture over here, you had, where is it? The porch was next to the porch was next to the mavui, and one pillar that held up that porch was by the front of the mavui. So you have over here. Here's the mavui is over here. And one of the pillars that held up the porch is by the entrance of the mavui. So it's there. It's there. It does stick out to be a lechi, but it wasn't placed there for that purpose. Pashtus, we're talking about this one over here, because the mavui is back here. The entrance to the mavui is over here, and you have this pole over here. So it sticks out over the wall a little bit. So if it was put up specifically for that purpose, it would serve as a lechi, but here it wasn't. It was put up in order to hold up the porch. Well, fine, but that one's way past the end of the mavui. That's not going to help us. Yeah. Whatever. The point is that there was this pillar that was there, but it wasn't there for the purpose of being a lechi. It was there to hold up the porch. And to have a pligiba Abaya v'Rava called a shnayu. Throughout their lives, Abaya and Rava argued about it, whether it's considered a valid lechi or not. Now, so we see that it's not just a question of whether you're soymach on it before Shabbos, because obviously at some point they could have said, we're going to be soymach on it, and then if we said that was the machlokas, then they would both have to agree. So it has to be that even if you did want to be soymach on it before Shabbos, the question still is it good or is it not good because it wasn't put up for that purpose?
So that would be like the tree.
So that would be like the tree, right. So even though they tried to be soymach on it before Shabbos, Rava would hold that's still no good. Now in this case, again, we have six cases in Shas where the halacha is like Abaya, Ya'al Kagam. Most of the Rishonim understand that the Lamed is our case over here, Lechi Ha'im and Me'elav. So the halacha here would be like Abaya, and that's how it's brought in Shulchan Aruch. So therefore, like this. Again, So one second. So what would it be? If you were soymach on it before Shabbos, meaning you had in mind, there's a tree here, we're going to use that as a lechi to be able to carry in the mavui, then that would be fine. If you weren't soymach on it, so either one example of not being soymach would be if there was another lechi and then it fell down, and now you want to use this as a backup, like in the story with Rav. Another example, it mentions Shulchan Aruch, would be, let's say, so you had the tree there, you said though, you know what, we're still not carrying in this mavui, we're not relying on this tree. And then the next Shabbos, in the middle of Shabbos, they want to say, for example, you know what, maybe let's use the tree after all and be able to carry in the mavui. Then you can't do that. In the middle of Shabbos, let's say, I mean, between one Shabbos and the next, but Pashtus, you could. But the Gemara mentions it in Bav Metzia.
We just don't know.
Well, so there are a couple of places in Shas where Tosfos gives a different definition of the Lamed, one of them is Yemei Leida, a case in Masechta Nida, another one is Loi Efshev Loi Kamachavan, a case in Psachim, according to that way of looking at it, the halacha would be like Rava over here. However, most Rishonim don't learn like that. We do have something that we learned a few days ago, and we had a case involving a partial wall that was built in front of the Mavoi, where we said if it was more than 4 amas wide, then it doesn't count as a lechi, because then already it's not there's no heker in it. So Tosfos says that actually it might not be so simple, because if we're saying over here that a lechi ha'omen me'elav is fine, so who cares if that wall is so actually Tosfos says over there that it's one thing if the wall is 4 amas wide, then already it doesn't really serve as a heker, so then therefore it's no good. But if it was built for the purpose of a lechi, then it would be fine even if it was beyond 4 amas. So if it was built, so if it wasn't built for the purpose of a lechi and it's narrower than 4, the halacha is like a baya, and therefore you're allowed to carry in such a mavui. The thing itself counts as a lechi, even though it wasn't built for a lechi. Once it reaches 4 amas, then it would have to be it was built for the purpose of a lechi. Otherwise, you don't have enough of a heker because it just looks like a wall of the mavoi. Okay. Mishnah says, "Bakol oisim l'chayayim." You're allowed to make l'chayayim out of anything. Afilu b'davar sheyesh beruach chayim, even a live thing. So you're allowed, for example, to take an animal and stand it up over there to serve as a lechi. Like by Ahsoka, yeah. Reb Meir says it's also. In general, Rashi explains on Amud Beis, Reb Meir holds that a mechitza that's held up by Ruach Chaim is not considered a valid mechitza, because the Ruach Chaim itself is insubstantial. It's something insubstantial. Well, not so much if it dies in the middle, you're not going to have a mechitza. I mean, you could say the same thing about anything else. A lechi can also fall down, like we just said. The point is, Reb Meir says, a lechi or mechitza or whatever has to be held up by something substantial. And the Ruach Chaim, the life force of the animal, is not something substantial. So that it can live for many years, but the fact is, it's not something that doesn't have substance. You can't measure, you can't weigh or whatever that Ruach Chaim. So therefore, Reb Meir doesn't consider it. So Reb Meir says that you can't make a lechi out of an animal, for example. Another din, umatami mishum goylol, the Tanakhama continues, an animal can also become tome as a goylol. We've learned about a goylol before. Rashi learns throughout Shas that a goylol is the covering of the arayin. So you have, for example, you're burying a person, you have the top of the arayin is called the goylol, the sides of it are called the doifik, and those are matami, a person who's touching them. So the Tanakhama holds then that an animal, it's possible to use an animal as a goylol, and if you do, then the animal is matame, even though usually we have live animals are not matame, but here, where you used it as a goylol for a kaver on a temporary basis, of course, then it is matame. Tosfos has a different definition in all those places that the goylol actually means the matseva. Not necessarily a matseva by the side of the, it would be probably be more like the kind of matsevas that lie flat along the caver, like they have, like you have, for example, the ones on Harazesim, you have a few of them in other places. Yeah.
So it's like the next layer on top.
I guess it would be like the next layer, right? Okay, anyway, yeah. So matama mishum golo, vira meyer matah, Reb Meir says it's not, because Reb Meir says again that an animal cannot serve as a mechitza, and therefore, so therefore it can't serve as a golo either. Another din, you'd be allowed to write a get on a live animal. Rabbi Yosef Aglili says it would be possible for reasons that we're going to see in the Gemara. So we have three different cases over here. Two of them involving the lechi and involving the golol involve the question of whether an animal can serve as a mechitza or not. The third one, a get, is a different issue, as we're going to see in the Gemara. So the Gemara says, Tanya, Reb Meir Omer, kol davar sheyesh bo ruach chayim, anything that's alive, ein osin osin loy doifen l'sukkah, you can't make it a wall for a sukkah, v'loy lechi l'mavri, or lechi for a mavri, v'loy pasen l'beroiz, you can't use it as one of these four pasen l'beroiz that we said, even if the animal is more than a tefach by a tefach, an amma by an amma, you can't use it as one of the four diumdin. V'loy goylol l'kever, and you can't use it as a goylol for a kever, meaning if you used it as a goylol, it doesn't become tameh. Mishum Rabbi Yosef Aglili Omru, they said in the name of Rabbi Yosef Aglili, af en kosfenol of gite noshim, another din, you're not allowed to write a get on an animal. So my time at the Rabbi Yossi Haglili. So what's Rabbi Yossi Haglili's reason? So the Gemara doesn't ask about Rabbi Meir's reason, because Rabbi Meir's reason we know from the Gemara in Sukkah is, again, because he said kol mechitza ha'emedes beruach chayim, a mechitza that only stands because of the life of the animal or the person is not considered a valid mechitza. By the way, we're going to talk about later on in the Masechta, we're going to talk about an example of using people as a mechitza. That wouldn't work according to the mayor. It does work according to the Chachamim. So you can use people as a mechitza with certain conditions that we're going to talk about later in the Masechta.
Does it work in the oil?
To visit the oil? I don't know if it works for that.
Around people, around
Cohen? I don't know. No, they used to have the Cohen boxes. They didn't have people around them. Yeah, they... Did they? So, okay, maybe it works. I don't know. Oh, well, then there you go, then. Okay. Yeah. Oh, well, so there you go then. So people can serve as a mechitza for that also. Okay, well, we'll talk about that in more detail later in the Masechta. Anyway, yeah, Rav Meir would disagree with that. So anyway, so Rav Meir's reason we don't really need to explain right now. But we need to explain, why does Rabbi Yossi Haglili have a problem writing a get on a live animal? Why can't you write on the side of the animal, Hareyat Megureshes, etc., or whatever. No, that's not... Yeah, well, that's not the point. The point is all you need is to give the animal to the woman, and then what happens after that doesn't matter. I mean, like nowadays, when they give a get, right, they rip up the get afterwards. So as long as she had it in her hand at one point, then it's fine, yeah. Fine, okay. Now, so my time at the Rabbi Yossi Haglili, and by the way, we have to remember, in a number of these cases, we're not just talking about where the animal is roaming around free. If the animal is roaming around free, you can't use it a lechi either, for example. We have to be talking about it's tied in place. And still, Rabbi Meir is saying that it can't count as a valid lechi for a mavri and so forth. And Rabbi Yossi Haglili is saying, even if the animal is tied in place, you can't write a get on it. So why not? So Tanya. The Pasuk says, Sefer, this is actually in this week's parasha, the Kosev la Sefer Christus, the Pasuk says, you should write her a Sefer of Christus. Now, the word Sefer in and of itself, ainly ela Sefer, you would only know from that that it means a parchment scroll. Rashi explains, the word Sefer means a scroll made out of parchment. It has to be, Rashi explains, because you have Pesukim in Yirmiyah where it describes the Sefer, it describes the Megillah that Yirmiyahu wrote, and he sent to Yehoyakim to get him and his ministers to do tshuva, and the Pasuk describes it over there as a Megillah, and it also describes it as a Sefer. So we see that a Sefer is defined as a Megillah, a parchment scroll. So if it said Sefer, Ein Li Ela Sefer, then you would think a get has to dafka be written on a parchment scroll. Minayin l'rabbis kol dover. How do we know that you can write a get on anything else? Talmud lema v'chosav loch mikol mokim. The pasuk says he should write for her, and those words are extra. So it means that you can write it on anything. It doesn't have to be dafka. It doesn't have to be dafka parchment. It could have, well, didn't have to say v'chosav at all. It couldn't have to say a kosev at all. It could have just said a v'nosan loch sefer Christus or something. Obviously, if he's giving her a sefer Christus, then it has to be written. Ah, so Tosfos points out, you have two different places in the Pesukim over there where it says V'chosav lo. So therefore, we have an extra one available to Darshan.
Oh, thank you, Tosfos.
Yeah. Okay. Tosfos also points out that you have over here, in effect, you have kind of a klal, a prat, a klal. You have V'chosav lo as a klal, Sefer is a prat, but then it continues. V'nosan v'yada is another klal. So therefore, so we're not just limited to parchment. V'nosan v'yada means he places it in her hand. No, because you could hand over an animal from one person to another. And besides, if it's a small enough animal, you could pick it up and hand it to her. Whatever, yeah. Okay. No, forget about that. A small sheep or something new, whatever. Okay, whatever. Keep in mind the part of the get that's necessary on a Daraisa level is just the words Hareat Muteras Lachadam. All the rest of the folder roll that we write over there, and the date and the names and everything is all Midrabanan. Yeah. You have Toref and Tofus. You have the Toref. The Toref includes the date and the names and whatever, and then the Tofus is the rest of the boilerplate of it. But still, yeah. Okay. Anyway. It doesn't have to be written by a sofer. I mean, practically speaking, it is written by a sofer, and it is written in. Yeah. Okay, let's go on, guys. Okay. So im kein ma tamad loima sefer. So if anyway you're allowed to write on anything, then why does it mention the word sefer? Loima loch, because it comes to tell you, says Rabbi Yisrael Glibi, ma sefer dover she'en meruach chayim. A sefer is not something that's alive. Ve'ena oichel, and it doesn't eat. Af kol dover she'en meruach chayim. Ve'ena oichel, the same thing. Anything else you write a get on cannot be something alive, and it cannot be something that eats. So therefore, so you can't write on an animal. Well, that's what he's saying. That's what we're learning from the word sefer. That's his proof. V'rabbanan, what are the Rabbanan answer to that? They say, miksiv bas sefer. If the Pasuk had said, v'chosav lo bas sefer, then you're right. The Pasuk would be limiting us to tell us what you can write on and what you can't write on. And then we would say, like you're saying, that from that we would learn from sefer, we would learn a mamatzinu, that whatever else you're writing on has to be in some way similar to a sefer. But sefer, ksiv, instead the Pasuk says, just for nosam lo sefer krisos. So therefore, the word sefer there doesn't mean a scroll at all. L'sfiros dvorim ba'almo hu da'asa. All it comes to tell us is that there has to be a telling over of the words of the get. Similar to sefer, yeah. So it just means that, v'chosav lo, Rashi says, in effect, what the Pasuk can say, v'chosav lo divrei krisos. He has to write out for her the words that say that she's nichras, that she's cut off from him, harayat m'chadas l'chaladam, and so forth. Okay, so the question is, v'rabbanon hai v'chosav lo mai darshi be, what are the Rabbanon learning from the words v'chosav lo? If there's, so according to Rabbi Yisrael Glili, that sefer means parchment, and then he needs v'chosav lo to tell us that you can write on other things, so that's what he's using v'chosav lo for. The Chachamim will hold, to begin with, there's no miut that you can only write on parchment, so what are they doing with v'chosav lo? And again, it can't be to teach us that you need to write at l'shma, because as Tosfos says, you have two v'chosav lo's in the psukim over there. So the answer is miskareshes. They use it to teach us that you can only divorce her with writing. You can't divorce her by giving her money and saying harayat mutaris l'chaladam with this money. And why do we need that? Because otherwise we would think as follows. Because we have a hekesh between getting married and getting divorced. Because the pasuk says over there, so we have the famous hekesh that we learn that there are certain similarities between divorce and marriage, between divorce and kiddushin, which we learn various dinim from that in Masechta Kiddushin and Masechta Gittin and whatever. So therefore, so we would think by the same thing, ma havaya bekesef over itkashitzia lavaya, ma havaya bekesef apitzia bekesef. So just like havaya, her becoming his wife, one of the three ways we can accomplish that is with kesef. We know there's kesef shtar and bia, af yitzia bekesef. So maybe yitzia could also take place with kesef. Kamash malon. Therefore, the Chacham say that's why it has to say bekesef law, to stress that only way to accomplish gerushin is by writing it out. Okay. Well, the question and the point isn't that it's true. It shouldn't be so easy, but that's not maybe that's the reason, maybe not, but whatever it is, yeah. No, I don't think it mentions that in the Gemara over there. No. No, by a kohen. No, I don't think the Gemara mentions that svara there. No, it is true that we don't want to encourage divorce. You know, hamizbeach murder all of demaris and not that. That could be maybe the time of dekura. That could be the underlying reason why the Torah insists that it should be done b'ksiva. But I don't think the Gemara mentions. I don't think the Gemara mentions that point. I don't know, maybe. There's a certain kind of get, right? They had the get makusha, the complicated folded get that they made for the sake of kohenim. But that's not on a raisa level. That's midrabanan. They made that takana. Okay. Okay. Onward. Rabbi Yosef Aglili, high svara menolei, new, and where does Rabbi Yosef Aglili get that from? He also has to have something to tell us that you can't accomplish gerushin with money. So where does he get that from? He says, nafkalemi sefer krisos, sefer kosa vein dover acha kosa. He says, you learn it from the word, that the pasuk continues, v'nosam la sefer krisos, so v'chosav la sefer krisos v'nosam yada. So the word sefer krisos means a sefer cuts her off. Since it doesn't just say sefer, which he said means parchment, it's a sefer of krisos. So it means the only way to accomplish krisos is with a sefer. So no, forget about that. That already he said from the word sefer. But he's saying this, that also that you should know that you can't accomplish it with money, that we know from the fact that it says sefer krisos. The krisos can only be accomplished through a sefer. Yeah, not through money, right. V'rabbanon, what are the Rabbanon answer to that? Hai sefer krisos mibayle ledavar akodes lebeina lebeina. They say that the word sefer krisos tells us a different din. That the get has to be something that makes a permanent separation between him and her. L'chidatanya, namely, we learn in a brisa. If the man gives the wife the get and says, Hareze gitach amonas shalai tishti yayin, amonas shalai teichu lebesavich, if he gives her the get and says, this is al-tnai, that you shouldn't drink wine, or that you shouldn't go to your father's house, lo'olam, if he says these tnoyim should be forever, ein zeh krisus, then that's not considered krisus, because there's still a connection between them, there's still an attachment between them, and therefore that's said, yeah. And Tosfos points out, now when it comes to Beis Avich, you would have to say, it doesn't just, now you can't just say that it means only as long as your father is alive, because in that case it is Christmas. Eventually he's going to die, and then eventually he's going to die, and then she'd be allowed to go there. It has to mean that Beis Avich, for this purpose, means also his descendants are also called Beis Avich. So therefore, so even when his descendants are alive, you wouldn't be able to go there, and that would be forever. Tosfos brings as an example, we have by Tamar and Yehuda over there, where after, so what happens? Tamar marries Aaron, he dies, she marries Onan and he dies, and then Yehuda wants to put her off, he doesn't want her to marry Shelah because he's afraid he's going to die also, so he tells her, Shvi Almana Beis Avich, go live in your father's house as an Almana. Now who's her father? Shame. If you calculate according to the figures that it gives in the Psukim, Shem was already dead, 60 odd years at that point, and it's still calling it Beis Avich because her brothers are still alive. So you see that Beis Avich, right? So if he says, La'olam ein zekrisus, kol shloshim yayim harei zekrisus. But if he says, for example, that this t'nai should be in effect for 30 days, then it is krisus, because at the end of the 30 days, they're completely cut off. So the Chachamim say, that's what we're learning from the word sefer krisus. So you, Rabbi Yossi Aglili, are saying from that you learn that you have to use a sefer, not money. We're saying, no, that you can use a sefer, that you have to use a sefer that we learn from the cost of law. Which you, Rabbi Yossi, are using the cost of law to learn that you can write on other things other than parchment. We're saying that the word Sefer Krisus teaches us that it has to be Dovar Kodesh Beina Labeina. What about Rabbi Yossi Aglili? He also agrees with that din. So where does he learn it from? So the answer is Nafkele Mikores Krisus. He learns it because the Torah could have said Sefer Kores, and instead it says Sefer Krisus. So therefore you can learn an extra thing from it. You can learn that the Sefer is what's needed for Krisus, nothing else, and not that the Sefer is needed, not money. Again, we said it doesn't dafka have to be a sefer because the cost of law means anything else. But sefer krisus would mean that not money, and the sefer kores would mean not money. And since it's instead of kores, it's krisus, then instead we can also learn this din that has to be a complete cutoff. V'rabbanan, the rabbanan would answer kores krisus lo darshin. We're not going to darshin from that distinction. We're not going to say that there's a difference between kores and krisus. You can only learn one thing from it, and therefore, yeah. Okay. Fine. The halacha is in fact like the chachamim. So you are allowed to write the get on a living animal. However, what you do have to do, the Gemara explains in Gittin, you can't have that you write the get on something and then you cut it off. So if you're going to write the get on an animal, you have to give her the entire animal. You can't, let's say, afterwards shech the animal and cut off the skin and give it to her. That would be possible. Yeah. Okay. Mishnah says, Shayara Shachonsa Babika, if a caravan stays over Shabbos in a valley. Now the valley itself doesn't have machitzis, so it would be a camelus. You wouldn't be allowed to carry in it on Shabbos, but they want to be able to carry things between their tents and whatever on Shabbos. Because it's a valley, it doesn't have walls around it. It's not a Rosh Rabim, because it's not a Rosh Rabim, because it's not meant for people to walk in, and Malcolm Tur, it's also not. So yeah, it's a camelus. V'ikifur clay behema. They surrounded their camp with things that are used with the animals. So for example, they used saddles. They used stirrups. They used wagons, whatever. Yeah, and they made an enclosure around their area. Metalflin besoicha. They're allowed to carry within that enclosure. Ovil vaj yehe geder gavoya asarat tvachim, as long as the fence is at least 10 tvachim tall. Velo yupirtzis yiseris al abinyan, and also that you can't have more open area than closed up area. And another rule, kol pirtza shika eser amas muteres, if you have a gap in it up to 10 amas, then it's mutter, mifnei shika pesach, because that's still considered like a door. Yosemikan, also, more than that, it's also. So in other words, you have to have three conditions. The fence itself has to be 10 tvachim tall. It has to be that there's no gap in it more than 10 amas wide. And it has to be that the total amount of the gaps is less than the total amount of standing area. As long as, now that's provided that the gaps are less than 3 tvachim, or more than 3 tvachim wide. If the gaps, so if you have gaps of less than 3 tvachim, then lavu, then you have no problem with those. But if you have gaps more than that, then you have to have more oimia. So the saddle has to be 10 tvachim off the ground, yeah. Okay, so the Gemara starts off, Itmar, porutz ke oimid. What if you have exactly as much closed up as open up area. So you don't have more or less than you have. It's exactly the same. Yeah. Rapapa ama mutter, rabhuna brede vishu ama asr. So Rapapa ama mutter, because he says, Hachi agmer rachmana la Moshe, because when Hashem taught Moshe these dinim, which are part of Halacha la Moshe Misinai, so he taught him, loy tifretz ruba, make sure that most of the area is not open up. So as long as most of it is not open, as long as exactly half of it is open, then you're good. Rav Huna Breide Rishoma Aser, because Hachi Agmei Rachmana LaMoshe, this is how Hashem taught it to Moshe. Gdur Ruba, make sure that most of it is fenced in. And here you don't have most of it fenced in because it's exactly half and half. So the Gemara says, Tanan, let's look at the Mishnah and see which one the Mishnah fits according to better. The Mishnah says, V'lo yopirtzi siseris al abinyan. The Mishnah says that you have to make sure that the gaps are not more than the built-up area, implying ha kibinyan, implying if it's exactly as much as the built-up area, mutter, then it would be fine. So what is Rav Huna Breide Rav Yeshua going to do with that? The answer is loy tema hok binyan mutter. Don't say that the Mishnah means to imply that if they're exactly the same, it's mutter. Ela eme im binyan yoser ala pirtza mutter. Rather, say that what the Mishnah is implying is if the built-up thing is more than the gaps, then it's mutter. So the question is avo kibinyan mai oser. So then, what are you telling me? The implication is that if it's exactly the same, it would be oser. Yehochi listeni loy yopirtza kibinyan. Then in that case, the Mishnah should use the expression according to Rav Huna Breide Rav Yeshua. The Mishnah should use the expression that the pirtza shouldn't be exactly as much as the binyan, because according to him, if it's exactly as much, it's still oser. Okay, so the Gemara says kasha. Now it's not a tiuvta on him, and in fact, well, we're going to do one more case, but in fact. We're going to have later on, we're going to continue the sugya tomorrow, and we're going to see that according to Rapapa, we find a contradiction against Rapapa. So therefore, Rav Huna Breide Rav Yeshua is not completely, so therefore, that's why the Gemara is leaving it as kasha rather than tiuvta, because later on, the Gemara is going to point out, on the other hand, we seem to have a tiuvta against Rapapa. Yeah. Okay. Toshma, what about, we learn in a Mishnah in Sukkah, Hamakora Sukkose Bashfudin Oy Baruches Amita. If a person puts schach for a sukkah, he uses iron poles, which of course are possible schach, or the long poles of a bed, which are possible because they're makabel, because they're kalim and they're makabel tumah. Im yesh rebach beinehen kemoisan, if there is exactly as much space between these things as the things themselves, ksheira, then the sukkah is still kosher, because you put in kosher schach in those spaces, and then it's kosher. So you have, now the implication is you have exactly half good schach and half not good schach. So, according to Rav Huna Breide Rav Yeshua, why is that good? L'chora, you have to have mostly good schach. The answer is hachamayaskin kishenichnas v'yotzei, because we're not talking about over here where there's exactly as much room. You're talking about there's enough room to be able to take the shfudim in or out. Now that means there's a slight bit more space around them because not so much for putting your fingers, you could pick them up from the ends, but the point is, in order to be able to get them in and out, it has to be that there's a tiny bit more space than them themselves. So therefore, there's a tiny bit more space. So therefore, yeah. So the problem is, what do you mean, though? It is possible to make it exactly the same. After all, the Mishnah is not specifying whether it's nichnas v'yotzei, so it could actually be talking about a case where you have exactly as much space between the shvudim as the shvudim themselves, not even where there's room to pull out the shvudim, and still we seem to be saying it's kosher. Tosfos actually has a couple of problems with Rashi's explanation, and Tosfos brings a girsa from Rabbeinu Hananel instead, that what the Gemara is saying, that it's impossible to get it exactly right. You're always going to have, if you do that, you're going to have a tiny bit of space left on either side of the shvudim, but the problem is that space is not necessarily filled with kosher eschach either. So once you're counting, you have to have the majority is kosher eschach. You have between the shvudim and the tiny amounts of air around them, then you don't have a majority of good eschach. So the answer is Amar Rab Ami b'madif. So Rab Ami says, you're right. What we actually mean is that you weren't mitzamtzim. You made the space between one shvud and the next slightly wider than the shvud itself, like over here. So therefore, it's slightly wider, and therefore you have mostly good schach, and therefore you're good. On the top over there, yeah. The Gemara was assuming that you have exactly as much space between them as the sides of the shvudim. Sorry, this is the diagram for Rav Ami. So the Gemara assumed it was exactly the same, a strip of schach, a strip of shvud, etc., and that all the strips are exactly the same. And the problem is that not necessarily is that going to work. And the answer is Rav Ami saying, you're right, the strips of schach are slightly wider than the shvudim. So you have the majority good schach, and therefore you're good. Rava Amar. Rava says, you don't even need that answer. It could be exactly that. It could be the spaces are exactly the same. But what you do is imhoyun asunan edav noisne shesi shesi noisne edav. What you do is you put the kosher schach crosswise to the shvudim. So now what you have is you really have filled up all the space between the shvudim. It has to be because both ends of the schach have to be sitting on top of a shvud. Otherwise, it's going to fall in. So therefore, what you have is now, so now you have the entire space between the shvudim is closed up with real schach. There's no air gaps. There's no nothing. You have, it's exactly filled. Then that's the picture. That's the picture. You can see the shvudim are lying this way, and the schach is lying this way. So therefore, so it exactly covers, completely covers the gaps between the shvudim, and therefore that would be fine. Because that way, you have exactly half and half, then therefore, so Rashi says, you do have slightly more kosher aschach. Because again, according to Rashi's Girsa, EF shel tzamtzim, it's impossible that you're going to have the space between the shvudim is exactly as much as the shvudim. It's going to be slightly more, and that slightly more is covered with schach, and therefore you're good, even according to Rav Huna b'Rei Rav Yeshua. According to Tosfos, that the Girsa was EF shel tzamtzim. And then the point was that there's no air spaces like this. The Havamina in the Gemara, the Makshan was asking, aren't you inevitably going to have air next to each one of the Shvudim? And therefore, when you count the Shvudim plus the air, you have a majority not. And Rava is saying, no, if you put the Schach crosswise, then the air is completely covered up. Yeah. Okay. So we'll continue this discussion tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, with Toshmaya. Shkoyach, everyone.